Hey, this is Sharon from Wooden Station, and I'm in Frederick's apartment here in Stockholm, so join us.
Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you.
Your last name is Danadel.
Yes, it is.
Does that mean that you have a connection to nobility?
Well, I'm not sure.
It means noble.
It means nobility, of course, but I think when we were forced to have a last name by Napoleon, I think somebody thought it was very fun to call themselves maybe nobility, you know, Den Adel. I think that's what I'm thinking. I've never checked it out, though.
So people didn't have last names until Napoleon told them to?
No.
Didn't know that.
Okay. Yes, I have something you didn't know yet. So great. Good start.
I think there's a new Napoleon movie coming out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. An amazing actor. What is his name again?
Joaquin Phoenix, right?
Yes, I love him.
I listened to one of your latest songs called Wireless, which is about a soldier going to war, thinking that he's fighting for a good cause, and then it turns out that he's basically been manipulated.
Yeah, totally. Well,
how did you come up with the idea for that song?
Well, of course, there's a lot of things happening in the world right now, and we were very much inspired by the war in the Ukraine, by Russia, and I believe that there's two sides to a story. I believe that there's a lot of people who know that they're actually doing a war that's that they're on the wrong side of history. But I think there's also a big group of people that really believe what their government is saying because they've been told so many years already what a certain truth is to the government, that they actually believe that. And I believe that certain people actually think they're going to liberate the Ukraine from fascism, and because that's what they've been told. And that, from that perspective, the song Wireless was made, but also with the idea of the government using people just as marionettes in a way, just to fight a war for an elite in a certain way as well.
How did you react when you heard that Russia had invaded the Ukraine?
I was shocked because of the fact that we realized that Russia is a superpower. They can continue with this war for a very long time. And having to to experience that within Europe, of course, so close by, it's 2.5 hours flight from where I'm living, from the Netherlands, and I think for you guys, maybe probably the same kind of distance. It's very close by, and it's we're not sure what he's going to do next. Also, so it's if they're going to win, there's going to be another country that's being oppressed by a regime like Russia, and I don't think we need that. I think we need more balance in Europe, and I think it's important to write songs and talk about that. We might not move mountains, but I hope in a small way we can contribute to keep that subject alive, because a lot of times it becomes old news for a lot of people, which is logical also.
Yeah, which is basically happening now with everything in Israel.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, people's attention
just drifts off. We know what's happening. And of course you have a life to lead. But on the other hand, it keeps important that we shouldn't forget that we should keep supporting the Ukraine and maybe, you know, other countries as well in not finding a solution. But, you know, if we stop supporting the Ukraine, if they don't get the things they need, for instance, for the Ukraine, then they're going to definitely lose this war. And sort of depending on us to fight for that freedom.
Because also Russia is pretty good at long wars.
Yeah, totally. And they're everywhere. They really gain by destabilizing Europe and other countries, like they did with Brexit, like they did with the elections in America. So,
have you had any reactions from your Russian fans? Because you're pretty big there. You've toured both in the Ukraine and in Russia.
We did, and they're not happy about it, of course. But I also spoke to some people, actually privately, on my because I have contact with some people that fled the country because they were not agreeing what the government is doing. And so even if they would agree with us, that part of of our fans won't be able to say so, because there's no freedom about speaking up, of course. You can only hear about the people that are believing the government, of course.
My girlfriend worked in Moscow in the late 90s in a bar, and she kind of fell out with a few of her friends after the war started, because they told her that she was brainwashed.
Yeah.
You know, how can you not understand that Ukraine is a fascist country? And she was like, but, you know, how can you believe this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's really crazy. It's a world upside down. I remember when I toured once in Russia, and I read an article about something happening, and I came into Russia and I saw the news there, because on the airport there was like big screens and there was news, and I asked the promoter, like, or somebody who was traveling with us, like, what's it about? And he told the story exactly in 180 degrees different direction than I had just been reading in Europe. So it's like, yeah, somewhere you can't blame them. If you've been told the same thing over and over and over, it's, you need to do a lot of effort and be very creative, maybe also finding different news sources, especially nowadays, to hear a different story.
I've seen videos where you like wave the Ukrainian flag on stage. Do you think that you will be able to tour Russia again before there's a change of government?
No, I don't think we won't be able to do that, because I think it lingers on, even if there's a new government, probably. I don't think things will change that easily, because people have been told this for so many years that the Ukraine is a fascist country. And so to really, it needs time for people to understand that they've been lied to and that there's a different reality actually out there. So I'm not sure if we will ever play Russia again, which I find really sad, because I loved playing there and I met a lot of really beautiful, nice people. And so it's, you need to take a stand at a certain point, and it's so clear who's the aggressor and who is not the aggressor.
In 2018, you played in Kherson in the Ukraine, and yeah, the mayor invited you to plant a tree for peace.
Yes. That's at the time I was like, a tree for peace, but they're not at war, so why? But then they showed us around in the museum, and they explained also the bit of the troubles they always had, the tensions between them and Russia. There's a whole history there that I didn't know about, you know, because I learned certain parts of history, of course, in school, but you don't get the whole picture of every country, of course. And so it made a little bit more sense at that time. But then, you know, looking back at those pictures, because I found them recently on the internet again, because we were searching for a TV program to show actually us being there, planting the tree, and they are there actually. And seeing those faces again and remembering them again, it's like wondering what they are doing right now. Are they still alive? Are they fighting? Because mostly that those people were men and young people even at that time.
What kind of a tree was it?
I can't remember. I know it was a tree, and it was very early in the morning. It was after a show, and it's like, at 9 o'clock, you have to plant a tree. It's like, what?
Because Kherson was first occupied. That was the first city that
Russia invaded. Yeah, it was. And also won back again by the Ukraine.
And then the entire city was flooded because the Russians blew up a dam.
Yeah, exactly.
So what happened to your tree?
I don't think it's there anymore, probably. It's all gone, as far as I know.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's really sad. It was really a beautiful place.
Speaking of trees and flowers, there's a track called Cyanide Love, which has a reference to this video that went viral last year, where a Ukrainian woman was giving sunflower seeds to soldiers, telling them to put them in their pockets so when they were killed,
they would have sunflowers.
They would turn into beautiful sunflowers. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's very beautiful and it's very threatening at the same time.
It's schizophrenic.
Kind of like good heavy metal music.
Yeah, exactly. It was poetic also in a way, in a strange way poetic. And we use that actually, that sentence, the sunflowers on your grave, there will be sunflowers on your grave, you know, like, so we use that sentence actually in this song. And it's about the resistance in Kherson, actually, this song, and how they took out Russians in the middle of the night. It's like civilians that took a stand and just were organized together, trying to take over their city again. And there was like such a bravery, to my opinion, that it inspired us to write that song. So it's like Cyanide Love is like, cyanide is a nice way out of a situation you don't want to be in. Apparently, because the Russians they did finally get back their city. So, here's Janis Joplin with Peace of My Heart. She is one of the most emotional singers that I've ever heard. and she was a very big inspiration for me while growing up. I love blues kind of music, and well, she is like one of the first ladies doing that for me, and yeah, huge inspiration. So here is Peace of My Heart.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The title track on your new album, Bleed Out, is about Mahsa Amini.
Yes.
The Iranian woman who was killed by the Persian morality police. Horrible thing.
Well, the reason why... Well, you know, a lot of these songs that we wrote also Bleed Out, we never intentionally wanted to write specifically about certain subjects, but apparently because it made such a huge impression on us, these, again... brave people that take a stand because they can't live anymore the way they have been living and they feel caged, and then taking a stand for not knowing what's to come, maybe thrown into jail, maybe murdered, and to do that and knowing that it's not going to end well for you, still doing that, even like Navalny, you know, it's so brave, and it inspires eventually apparently us to write songs about it. And
Navalny in Russia.
Yeah, also, but also...
He was jailed, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this, it's just, you know...
He went back to Russia knowing very well that he would be in prison for the rest of his life, probably killed as well.
Yeah, exactly. And then still doing it and hoping that somehow it would spark people to demonstrate, which they did, but they were still outnumbered.
I remember when he was jailed back in 2017, maybe, and he went on Twitter... Or he made someone Twitter for him, and he wrote that not only is Putin destroying the country, now they're ruining my chance of seeing Depeche Mode live in Moscow.
Yeah. he has humor, which is very nice to see. He's not just that serious.
I read a description of your latest record when someone used the word genty.
Yeah, gent
is D-J-E-N-T. It's a musical genre that people often connect to like progressive metal, like Meshuggah.
Oh, really?
The Swedish
band. Okay.
But I thought that the word came from you, that you wrote it somewhere. But
it could be. Yeah, but you know, we also have like people helping us out with that, and sometimes I just miss certain words, and I was like, okay, did we actually use that?
But Meshuggah is from Sweden, and you have a lot of Swedish connections.
Yeah, well, I love Meshuggah, by the way, and we have a lot of Swedish connections. We have a Swedish producer, we got a Swedish guitar player.
Yeah, Stefan Helleblad plays the guitar, and he's from Sweden, he's from the island Gotland.
Yes, and I go there many times to do recordings with Daniel as well.
Daniel Gibson,
yes. Yeah.
Gotland is interesting because it looks more like one of those old German Hansa towns. It doesn't look very Swedish.
You don't think so?
Well, it's, you know, like the cobble streets.
Yeah, that's true.
Cobblestone streets.
And that's true. That's true. You're totally right.
The big wall. It's not... it's different from Sweden.
Okay.
My father is from Gotland.
Oh, really?
So I've been there a lot.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a magical place with all these, fossils you can find on the beach and stuff like that. And yeah, it's a beautiful environment to be.
But how did the Swedish connection come about?
Well, we started, we were looking for a new producer actually in 2004 and came across Daniel Gibson. And he had been doing some stuff in the Netherlands and somebody connected us to each other. And he had a background of being in a band, metal band himself, but also being very classical musician, because he used to be playing the violin himself and playing in apparently an orchestra somewhere. And so he had like different backgrounds that appealed to us, like, okay, you know, we always mixed orchestral parts with metal, and he's maybe the guy for us because he has done both himself. So we got in contact and we had immediate connection, like loved the same kind of bands, the vision that we wanted to go. He understood that and he helped us get there.
You also did a duet with Anders Fridén from In Flames.
Yes.
So there's...
There is a lot of Swedish. There
are
amazing bands coming from here as well.
Of course, you've played Sweden rock quite a lot of times.
Sweden does have a special place in our hearts because of that, because we know so many people. Also had like mixing people from Sweden. Yeah.
What do you think it is that there's so many symphonic metal groups from Holland? Is it your influence? Because you were probably the first or one of the first?
Yeah, probably one of the first. But it's like... I think you inspire each other. You know, if something gets played a lot in a certain place, it will plant a seed in other people's minds, like, oh, that's cool, let's try that out as well. But I think even though there's a lot of symphonic bands coming from the Netherlands, they're all very different from each other and maybe not even that comparable, but just because they're from the Netherlands and they have symphonic elements, we're all put together, of course. But yeah, there might be something in the water. I'm not sure. I find it difficult sometimes to explain myself.
We passed upon the stair, spoken walls and well, although I wasn't there, said I was his friend, which came as a surprise. I spoke.
Here is Nirvana's cover of The Man Who Sold the World by David Bowie. A sad song, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And it's a very emotional performance, that entire MTV Unplugged concert.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with you. This was my main band in my youth. I loved Nirvana. And I think what connects them to maybe Janis Joplin and other people I like is that they're so emotional on stage. You know, they just throw it all out there and there's no boundaries what you're not allowed to do. It's just pure expression. And that's what I love about Janis Joplin, about Nirvana, about Tori Amos, about so many other musicians that I love so much.
It's interesting though that, you know, maybe their most intense record is an Unplugged live.
Yeah.
Record, because, you know, Nirvana was a very noisy group, but you know, when he sings that old Lead Belly track, Where Did You Sleep Last Night, and his voice breaks at the end, it's, you know, it's easy to say that after someone's death, but it's as if he's like envisioning his own demise or something.
Totally.
It's almost scary when you listen to it now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things when you know now what happened, of course, and looking back at a lot of performances he did or things he did on stage, that you're looking back, okay, maybe that would have been a sign for some people.
So how did you discover Nirvana?
That's a good question. I don't know, actually. I think I heard on the radio, and I knew they were going to play in the Milky Way, and I was not allowed to go because I was too young and was too far away.
So how old were you then?
I don't know. What was it? I think 17, 16. I'm not sure, actually. Something like that, yeah.
Because you were born in 75, right?
74.
74, okay.
Yeah.
So you were in your teens.
Yeah, I was in my teens, yeah.
And you were a grunge girl? Or
A grunge girl, yes. I was very much. And then I met Robert, who was into metal more. And then I got introduced to the more kind of music that I'm in today. So, which was a totally new world opening up for me, like with Type O Negative, which I'm a huge fan of, Paradise Lost, which was also one of our inspirations. But yeah, so that opened doors to a different world that I love also very much. But if I go back to the first heavy band, it's not a metal band, but it is a grunge band, that is Nirvana.
Which was the first concert that you went to?
My first concert was Bruce Springsteen. I went with my dad because that's also, so one of those musicians that is, I don't know, he came across so, what you see is what you get. And that's what I love sometimes. He's not pretending. It's not like wearing strange clothes to look extra, to impress. Or he's just, what you see is what you get. And he's into the music. And he has to be dragged off stage because he can play on endlessly. And that's what I think just enchanting and beautiful about this person.
So your dad is Bruce Springsteen fan?
Yeah, he used to be. Yeah. Yeah, so he's not here anymore, so he passed away. But he was the one that took me to my first concert. And what I did...
Where was that? Was it like the Ajax Arena in Amsterdam?
It was like the Kuip in Rotterdam, because I lived close to Rotterdam, actually. And the thing was that what I did with my oldest son, because I've got two sons and a daughter, but my oldest son, who's always been very much into music, I took him to the Eagles, because he got all the cassettes from my father, and he was actually playing cassettes every night before going to sleep, and me going back into that time that I was listening a lot to the Eagles with my dad and my mom as well. And so his first concert was also at 10 years old. I was also 10 when I first saw Bruce Springsteen. I took him to the Eagles, and that was also like for him, like, oh my God, they're still here, and this is amazing. They're so crafted.
So you were 10, so that must have been like 1984 when he was on the Born in the USA tour.
Yeah, Born in the USA. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. And no, not the Born in the USA tour. It was called differently. It was The Tunnel of Love.
Oh, 1988 then,
yeah,
I think.
No, 1988. Yeah.
That's his moody divorce album.
Really? Is it about his divorce?
It's about his divorce, Tunnel of Love.
Oh, really?
There's a great song called Brilliant Disguise where he sings about being, you know, suspicious of his partner.
Okay.
That, you know, she's not what she seems to be, that she maybe has someone on the side.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It's about jealousy. It's about, you know, it's dark themes.
Yeah. But actually, then I was 14. Then I wasn't 10. I did that completely wrong. I thought it was nice to have that similar age to have to do it. But a Tunnel of Love always sounds like a bit dubious kind of title. It's like Tunnel of Love. I don't know. I don't want to picture that. But
I think his greatest track is on that record, Tougher Than the Rest.
Tougher Than the Rest.
That's a beautiful song.
It is. Yeah, totally. We could have put that on as well.
What did your parents work with when you were a kid? Because they traveled a lot. You lived abroad a lot.
My father was an expat, and the whole family traveled with him to Yemen, Indonesia, Suriname. And in the meantime, he was in telecommunications and a manager trying to do projects outside and giving people the first connection for telephone, actually, in certain areas. Like in Indonesia, it was like the first telephone connections actually came from that in the jungle. So in certain parts of the jungle, of course.
So how long did you live in Indonesia, for instance?
Well, almost 5 years, 4.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's an old Dutch colony, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And they even spoke Dutch at the time that I was there. Nowadays, they do that, of course, quite a bit less, and good for them in a way.
Was it like to live there?
It was amazing. It was.
So you lived in Jakarta?
Jakarta, yes, exactly. Yeah. And we went to Bali a lot of times. That's where I saw the Bali dancers. That's where I have my dancing off, I think. I have these strange movements
sometimes. You're waving your hands around here. Yeah, but I've noticed that because you look just like one of those traditional Balinese dancers on stage sometimes.
Yeah. And that's because people say, "Why? Where do you have that from? Who inspired you to do that?" And the only thing I can imagine is that, because I was always amazed, like how beautifully they danced, and I'm just trying to do that myself. Like, and I can understand it, because you just get into the music more when you move the same way and the same rhythm as the music goes. It's like, yeah, feeling it.
Both your parents were born in Holland.
Yeah, they're both Dutch. Yes, exactly. Both Dutch. Yeah.
Okay. So, what do you remember from living abroad for so long? Because, you know, when you're a kid, those years really shape you.
Yeah, totally. Well, of course, I lived also in Yemen, which is in the Middle East. And I went to an Arabic school because there was no school for me, no international school. And
so you speak Arabic?
No, I don't, because they took me out because eventually the only one who could actually speak to me was the only one who could speak English was my teacher. And eventually I ended up actually writing in, I think, in English or Arabic. I'm not sure. Normally you write from left to right, and I started from right to left. And then my parents said, well, maybe that's not a good idea that she's in this school, because you have to unlearn that again when you go to a different school again after that in a different country. And but, you know, it was difficult to make friends because we didn't speak the same language. And so I got homeschooling at a certain point from my mom, which she didn't have any degree for, so that didn't work out very well either. And then coming back in the Netherlands and having having to catch up a lot because I was behind certain things that I had should have been learning in the meantime. So it was that process of integration back in the Netherlands was difficult for me. And
did you feel Dutch when you moved back, or did you feel that part of you was like Indonesian?
What I felt is every time when I go back to those countries, which I did sometimes, I felt like a little bit coming home, because I recognized the colors, the herbs, I smell the herbs. When I eat the food, I feel it's a part of me. Like I don't feel like Dutch. I feel like a world citizen in a way, because I lived in so many countries for so many years. And then, of course, eventually ending up in the Netherlands for a long time. I got a bigger, because of this experience, I got a bigger picture of the world and cultures, and understood that there are so many differences, where I think when you grow up in just one country, you just have like one view of the world. You think everywhere that people are thinking the same thing and culture is the same way. But cultural difference can be so big already in one country itself. So it's I learned from that, and I think that helped me maybe relate to certain problems in the world easier, maybe understanding, being more open to that. And maybe, yeah, I don't know. I think it helped me in the end, but it was also difficult growing up as a child, again, coming back to the Netherlands and reintegrating, which didn't go very smooth for me.
In what way?
Well, that I was different from the rest, dressed different, thought different things.
How did you dress?
Well, maybe, you know, you know, what happens in school, of course, people just copycat a little bit because they want to be part of a group. And I came in there with totally different clothes from that I bought in a different country that they didn't understand. And I didn't speak the same language in a way. Not, of course, I spoke Dutch, but you know what I mean. It's like I didn't speak their language in a way that... In a group, it's different sometimes, like slang and stuff like that. And
so how bad was it? Did they like bully you, or was it?
I was bullied. Yeah. That left definite scars from somebody who's actually, because I'm a very open person. I became a little bit less open because of that. Again, also these kind of things help you eventually become a more whole person, I guess. It is a bad experience, but I turned it into something good, I think.
So how did they treat you? Was it like in Mean Girls? Like, you can't sit with us?
Yeah, that, but also like getting hit. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Oh.
And you grew up in Waddinxveen? How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Waddinxveen.
Waddinxveen.
Yeah.
What's that like as a city? It's in the south.
It's not a city. It's very... It's a forensic... village, actually, because it's between big cities, and everybody who doesn't want to live in the city lives there. It used to be like it's a countryside kind of thing. Actually, a nice town, but yeah, I have mixed feelings about it because I have beautiful memories because I met a lot of beautiful people there as well. But also while growing up, it wasn't easy. So, yeah.
And your partner or husband, Robert Westerholt, is from Buddingsven as well.
No, he's not. He's not, actually from the north. He was born in the north, very up north, the most north you can get, in Groningen, near the German border, actually. Then he moved to the central, more in the center part of the Netherlands, close to where I was living. And we met in school, actually. So we're high school sweethearts.
Really? How old were you when you met?
19. Yeah, 19, and still together. Yes.
So, and you were a grunge girl, and he was a heavy metal man.
Yeah, he was a metal guy. Yeah, and but also he dressed more like a grunge guy, so like ripped jeans and long hair, and I loved it. I love immediately, you know, checkered blouses and stuff like that.
Were you in the same class too, or no?
No, we were not. We were. You had different directions within the school, and I was. He was doing like something economics, and I was doing fashion actually. So, yeah. But we did meet in the center of the school where we had lunch. Everybody was just mixed all together, and it was nice. And I was in the school band, and he joined the band because of me.
Really?
Yeah. I started a school band with a few people that I met, and then he came like a year later to our school and half term actually, and then he wanted to get to know me actually, and so. Everywhere I was, I started groups everywhere, something to do events with, like parties on school, like for like a disco or like live music. I tried to make that on school and arrange that on school. And in every organization I was, he was in. It's like, you again? It's like, what are you doing here? School band, this, what's next? The first person who got me into music actually was this magical voice of Olivia Newton-John. And this song is a particularly very one of my, well, it's my ultimate favorite song by her, and it's A Little More Love.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I once spoke to an American friend who was very much into Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, really?
About the time when Grease came out.
Oh, wow.
She said that after Grease came out, all the girls in her school wanted to look like Olivia Newton-John. at the end of Greece, you know, when she returns and she looks badass.
Yeah.
And they all got the same haircut. So, yeah. So like the classrooms, when the girls sat next to each other, looked like fields of blonde broccoli.
Well, I never colored my hair, but I was like the same for years. Also, I love the movies for such a long time. I've been singing seriously until I was 12. The music of Greece every single day. I drove my parents nuts with that album. So, but yeah, but I loved that story so much. And Danny, of course, you know, John Travolta was one of my superheroes as well.
It's interesting to look at that movie now because they don't really look like teenagers.
No, not
whatsoever.
At all. Because they were actually 26 when they played those roles. At least Olivia was 26 and she was supposed to be somebody who was like 17 or something. But they did the trick well when she had the normal hair. She looked actually really young.
Did you star in any musicals yourself?
No, I don't like musicals.
You don't like musicals?
No, not that much. I like Les Miserables, and I like that's one of my favorite ones actually. But there's so many bad ones out there. I don't like them all. Most of them I don't like, but Les Miserables is one of my favorites. I think that's that one is an exception.
So how did the band come about? You and Robert went out, and then you started within Temptation.
Well, he was in a band called The Circle and already making this kind of music early 1990s, so like 1991, something like that. And then they broke up. They kicked him out of the band and I just had done some recordings for The Circle and I was like, yeah, what am I going to do? And they asked me to stay. I said, I can't stay. You just kick my boyfriend out. And we decided to start our own band and that eventually became Wood Invitation. And actually a lot of those band members that were in The Circle, eventually we asked them back years later to join us. And
But they kicked him out of the band knowing that he was your boyfriend.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well,
I was new to the band because their singer didn't show up and they asked me, well, you can pretty sing, you sing pretty well, so don't you want to do this for us? And I ended up singing everything and then they replaced almost everything eventually except for two songs.
Do you remember your first live performance? You know, what was that like? The first time you went on stage and sang?
Oh my God. That must be like on some kind of. I was in a cover band for quite some time. I was like 13 or 14 that I realized if I want to be a singer, I actually have to do something actively to get into a band. And there was this program in music school to say, and it was called How to Be in a Band, which was brilliant for that time because I had never seen anything like it, and they were ahead of their time. So there was this teacher, and he taught everyone specific parts of a song, like the guitar parts, bass parts, and let them all work together to actually play a song that we like U2, anything that was popular at that time. And we could pick our own song. So it was for us, of course, extra interesting to play that song that we love so much. And then I came in there saying, I would like to play the keyboards. I didn't want to play the keyboards. All I ever wanted to do was actually sing. So yeah, I ended up with all these notes on my keyboard, like, okay, hands here and 1, 2, 3. And then putting my fingers always too late and always like mixing up things. And like, Sharon, do you really want to do this? And in the meantime, they also asked, like, does anybody want to sing? And then nobody wanted to. So, okay, I'll try that then, you know. Like I was not interested, but I was so happy. I finally was able to sing. It's like, you know what, Sharon, you forget the keyboard. You can only sing. You're not allowed to do anything else but sing.
But you're not classically trained as a vocalist.
I'm not trained at all. No. I did try a few times because I was afraid that I maybe would ruin my vocal cords. And I ended up at a place and they said, like, but, you know, there's so many ways to roam. Why are you here? You're actually doing great. You're not having any pain to your vocal cords. And you have a big range. So you can also, if something is, you can play with that, you know. So I felt like, okay, I'm actually doing okay. I'm not going to do this anymore. But what was a life savior for me was actually those things like how to warm up your vocals, vocal cords. And I used YouTube especially to look that up. And that's a good tip for everyone who is actually starting maybe now, is like, please do that because you do need to warm up your vocal cords. And I never used to in the beginning, but I did that after 10 years that I was already doing music, actually, and that can really hurt your voice eventually.
That's interesting, because you know, when you do your style of music, your voice is kind of operatic. You kind of assume that you've sang a lot in opera houses around the world. Or something,
but I pretend a lot.
Well, do you growl as well?
No, I don't. No.
Have you tried it?
I did try it, but I was like, yeah, do I really need to do everything? And I think I just want to embrace that I am bringing something different to the table than the growling voice. I think it's cool that anyone who does it, actually, and it's cool that they can do it. They can sound like almost a guy, you know, in a way. But I think I think I can make a difference because I am a woman, and I like to embrace the fact that I can be that different color in metal and still be feminine in there. And I think that's something that I would like to address also, in a way that I think we are allowed to do that. And that's the different color and some new aspect that we can bring as women.
You wear a lot of interesting dresses on stage, and yes, you designed them yourself, right? Because you're a fashion major. You've studied fashion.
I studied fashion management, and I wanted to be a fashion designer, but at the time that I had to choose, there weren't much jobs around, so somebody told me, please don't become a designer again, not another designer, just, you know, go for something sensible and do management. And so I have a degree from management with the source of fashion, but I do know how to make things, because the previous school I did before that, fashion management school, was actually really making stuff, so I can make stuff, but I'm really bad at it, but I have good ideas. And so I like to work with people that actually know what they're doing behind the sewing machine, but also sometimes, you know, with designers, they have like their own signature, and I love working with them because I can ask them to maybe combine the ideas, and that's what I'm doing mostly. And sometimes I buy stuff from people that already designed something.
And your dresses are so interesting. They have like feathers and sometimes like metal stuff. It looks like something that like Cher would kill for. It's really flamboyant.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's nice to be expressive on stage. I think just being me in a dress that I would normally wear is not doing anything extra on stage, for me anyway, and the type of music that we're making. So our stories, you know, our music is very storytelling. So I think the clothes should be storytelling and supporting the story most of the time. So, and it's nice to watch. And, you know, I've always, as a kid, always wanted to, you know, be in big dresses, and this was my good excuse to do so as well.
I went looking for trouble, and boy, I found her. She's in love with herself. She likes the dark.
I love a lot of songs by Type Negative, but you are thinking I'm gonna request a different song, but I'm taking a different one. I want to have Black Number One, because that is my ultimate favorite. Here it comes.
Now it's All Hallows Eve, the moon is full. Or will she trick or treat? I bet she will.
Well, once we did a cover of Black Sabbath, and it's called Black Sabbath, the song, and I really love to play the song live, but unfortunately there's not much occasions to play, so to play it, but yeah, maybe we can play it here.
What is this that stands before me?
We once played with them on Ozzfest in the Netherlands, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get to meet Ozzy?
Not in person, unfortunately, but because there was a backstage within the backstage, and there was always
Ozzy. Is, right? It's like a video game. Yeah. You have to reach the next level, and you never, you know, Well, there's always a final boss, a huge security guard that prevents you from seeing Ozzy.
Well, once upon a time, with another band that I love very much, Type O Negative, I was at Dynamo Open Air, which was a huge festival back in the days in the Netherlands. And we were at the backstage, our first festival, playing on Dynamo. And I was walking around and there was a backstage in the backstage, but there was a small, well, gap in between the wall that they made, and I was just passing by, and I was in a flash, I saw Mr. Peter Steele sitting there. I was like, oh my god, it's Peter. And I just put my head through that fence and it's like, hey Peter. He said, hey, why don't you join me? And I went through the wall and he just made an opening for me. It's like, so I sat there and talked about hamburgers, that how they screwed it up in the Netherlands using mayonnaise, which he didn't like, and talking about the Beatles. And there was this girl next to him, very annoyed, looking at her nails, and that walked away like really offended because he was talking to me in the meantime and ignored her a bit. So probably that was his girlfriend, I guess, at the time. And we had just a lovely time there. And that's the only time I spoke to him, and I will always cherish it because, well, I loved his music so much. And he was such a nice, nice giant.
I remember when he was in Playgirl magazine.
Yeah.
Nude.
I heard about it, but I've never saw the actual picture.
Well, he was quite well endowed, as you say. But I read an interview with one other member in Type O Negative who said that Peter only did that because he knew that, you know, he would get a lot of chicks if he just went nude in Playgirl magazine. And he was so happy about that until the other members told him that, hey man, you know, it's not really girls who read Playgirl magazine. And he was like, what do you mean? Of course, I'm going to get so many chicks. Well, dude, you know, it's not really a magazine for girls.
It's like for boys.
Then he was totally depressed.
Well, I think it got so much attention media-wise that
The band got a lot of attention from it too.
Also, they gained a lot from it in a way.
In 2011, your husband, Robert, stopped touring to stay home and take care of your kids.
Yeah.
But has it been back playing live from time to time, or did he stop completely?
Yeah, no. He does like a surprise appearance here and there sometimes, just for fun. And he doesn't really miss the live performance, but it's nice for the fans that he comes on stage occasionally. Then they're like, yeah.
He's not someone who desperately wants to be on stage.
No, not at all. No. Although when he does take that microphone to talk to the audience, he used to make like jokes all the time that half of the audience only understood and half didn't. But like looked like him, like, what the F is he talking about? And then we had a great laugh at stage because that's typically Rob. It's like, okay, he started something. He's like, okay, where do I want to go with this? Or some people don't understand his humor, and then we had a lot of fun about that.
Do you remember any of his jokes?
Oh, no, they're so random. So about anything, it could be anything that he said, like, but it was just, for us, very funny. And then, you know, he did like to take the stage, but not that, he's not that kind of person that needs that limelight or anything. No, not at all.
Did you ever consider just bringing the kids on the road with you?
We did with our daughter, and when she was born. But it ended up us breaking up, actually, because it was too much of everything. You know, bringing the family into your daily, work, actually, of course. Like, you're in the office and you have a baby next to you that wants attention 24/7. You know, that's crazy. That was the worst thing we ever did, actually. We did bring a nanny, but the nanny also asking us constantly, what am I supposed to do? Can I come with you? Can I be there? Can I do... It was like, there was no time off, and it resulted actually us splitting up as a couple for a certain time. So that's also the reason that he could be in the band anymore, because like we were a little bit like two captains on the ship. And also at the end, at the end of the day, we didn't have anything to talk about anymore, because everything I did, he was there as well, and vice versa. And I'm the only one who can sing, actually. So it was like, okay, then I have to continue and he has to do something else. And it was the best choice for us as partners ever.
But he didn't leave the band completely. He just stopped touring.
Yeah, just stopped touring. And yeah. He still rides along with us. And so it's just not touring. And we got back together again.
How old are your kids now?
My oldest one is actually turning 18 in December. Oh! Oh my God. And my youngest is 12 and the one in between is 14. So I got one girl and two boys.
And how did they feel about your music?
Well, I was talking to my oldest son and I said, like, because I feel always guilty when I leave. It's like, I can't be on the holiday now, right, as we speak, because they have holiday in the Netherlands right now. And they have, like, the fall break for a week. So they're off to Spain and I'm here doing promotion all over Europe. And I feel guilty. And it's like, I'm so sorry that I'm not joining you again for this. And then they said, Mom, we're so proud of you. And because I said, oh, well, should I stop doing this then? Maybe I should just, you know, do something else and be home more often and I can be with you guys. No, Mom, we really love what you do. We're very proud. And I was like, okay, aw. Then I'm like, yeah, that's sweet.
You have a song called Don't Pray For Me.
Yeah.
Which, it made me think of school shootings. Because every time there's a school shooting, like in the US, politicians say that their thoughts and prayers are with the victims. Yeah. But no one talks about gun control.
Mm. Yeah, it's like yeah, saying A but not B.
Yeah. How did you come up with that track? Was it like some anti-religious sentiment or was it something
else? Yeah, in a way it is. Well, it was different things happening. I was doing an essay for Kerrang! Magazine in England, and they asked me to write an essay for International Women's Day. So I thought, okay, what can I write about? So, well, you can take any topic. And I looked up what other people had been writing about, and I saw there was nobody talking about something that's really... which is especially for girls is and women sometimes unfortunately is abortion, and I was just curious about what the rules are in every country, what the law is in every country in Europe, even because we are in United Europe, yay! And then I started to dig up like articles, new articles. I was doing this for weeks because I wanted to make really like a good article and a good essay or make a good, you know, conclusion out of that. And I discovered that there's so many things at that time. This was already like 2020 that I wrote this article. And that we're so divided within Europe about that. And especially in Poland, that was having PIS, which in the elections now also became the biggest party, unfortunately, again. At that time, so in 2020, when PIS was in charge, they tried to, and they did, they changed the abortion law. And they made it almost impossible to get an abortion in Poland, which is... not very European standard, you know, not the values that we have. We have what I find most importantly. I'm not pro-abortion. I'm not against it, but I believe in the individual choice, and that's very important to me. And so I saw that not just Poland was this way, but also many other countries like Italy. They're working against people that actually want to have an abortion.
Ireland.
Yeah, Ireland. Oh my God, Ireland. Don't forget Ireland. Yes. And but anyway. And then what happened, of course, now again in America, that they changed the laws in certain counties that you're not allowed to have an abortion as well. It made me, and I saw the movie Handmaid's Tale, all these elements that I saw and read about, it ended up in this song, but also about that it's people who are religious always tend to tell other people how to live their life. And I can't stand that because nobody's telling them how to live their life. I'm not telling them to have an abortion. You know, I'm not saying you have to have an abortion. It's like, but they are telling me not to have one, you know, never had one, I'm tending to one, but more like trying to sketch a situation. They're always trying to tell other people how to live their lives and they're superior to others. And so I believe, like I said before, I believe in individual choice. And I think only I can decide and you can decide yourself what you can live with eventually, you know.
I saw this video with one of my favorite comedians, Sarah Silverman. She said that she was thinking about having an abortion, but her boyfriend couldn't seem to get her pregnant. That That's horrible.
I'm sorry. That was a good one, actually. Didn't see that coming. Well, did I make my point, actually? Because I was...
You're fighting for a woman's right to choose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I wanted to point that out.
Because I don't think anyone is like pro-abortion just...
Yeah.
For the sake of it.
No. It's not a fun thing.
I'm so into abortions. That's the best thing.
but more like because I have been speaking about abortion and in this way and trying to explain what my stand is. And the people are, you are promoting people to kill babies. No, I'm not pro-abortion. Come on. You're turning things around. Don't turn my truth around.
And I know, that's awful. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, Tori Amos, yes, my hero. While growing up, I've listened so much to her while growing up and still do. Winter is my most favorite song. I don't know, it may be because I recognize myself in the lyrics. And it just has a special place in my heart.
What do you recognize about yourself in the lyrics?
I guess the relationship with your father. Like, okay, you have to do this on your own. I can't always be around. These words just trigger something.
Snow can wait, I forgot my mittens. Wipe my nose, get my new boots on. I get a little warm in my heart when I think of winter. I put my hand in my father's glove.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You have a lot of pyro on stage, a lot of fires and explosions.
Yeah, a lot of things blowing up.
Have you ever had any accidents?
A lot of almost accidents, yes. Yes. And actually, this time, actually, not one of the band members, I think. It was actually one of the band members. No, it was a crew member that got hurt by pyro, actually, on stage. That was too close to one of the pyro pots, and he was into the flames. And so, yeah, he got not severe injuries, but slight ones. And I also was rescued by Robert a few times on stage that I forgot that the pyro was there. And, you know, everybody needs to really pay attention because we have lights on stage that's saying there's pyro on and it's coming now. When the red lights are on, don't go near the stage or the end of the stage and or in front of the audience. But I sometimes just get into the music and I forget everything. And then I need to be rescued by one guitar player called Robert again in the past and nowadays by others sometimes. Otherwise, I'll be fully in the flames.
I would imagine that your dresses are quite like flammable.
Yeah, they are. Yes, yes. Although a lot of everything on stage all the other stuff actually is being checked by the fire department if it's not flammable. But actually, the dresses never have, actually. Thinking of it, yeah, good point.
What about your many wardrobe changes? Do you get, you know, stuck in things when you switch dresses? Well, or do you have people to help you out?
There's people helping me out, but if they pay attention. Sorry, Borka. Borka's my makeup artist. She's like my, well, she helps me with everything. You know, like also changes on stage. But anyway, but I don't do that much anymore because a lot of times what happened was that my corset broke. Like I couldn't get the zipper on again because I was too sweaty, or, you know, it was those kind of things you don't think of. Or boots, trying to change boots with zippers again, just getting stuck between my socks. And one time even ending up like holding my course because it was broken and having recordings, video recordings at the same time for a compilation coming out of that show. And I'm just one hand on my back, just holding my course together and trying to sing and do like, this is how I always am on stage, you know, like always one hand on my back and eventually having to stop the show because like, I really can't keep this up because I have to have two hands, of course, doing my stuff that I need to do.
The video for your song Wireless was made using AI.
Yeah.
And it looks really, really good. The only thing, you can tell that it's AI because people's fingers are a bit weird.
Yeah. But you had, well, we had, there's also like, we had to cut out a lot of things with this video because we had like soldiers in there with wearing helmets and they turned into mushrooms. And
That's cute though.
I think actually it was pretty funny, but yeah, the subject was not that funny. So we felt like we needed to cut it out, but it was actually quite funny. But also, yeah, like you said, fingers changing and yeah, a lot of things happening there. And we had Darth Vader in there all of a sudden, like just among
those
people.
Shows up.
Yeah, it just shows up and it disappears again. And it fades into something new. And that's with AI. You can't control it completely.
Would you ever like consider making music that way?
No, because for me, and I really 100% mean that, it's like for me, music, making music is the most magical thing in my life. Besides my family, of course. But making music is really, really the magical thing because there's nothing in the morning. There's an open canvas, like it's empty, blanco. And then at the end of the day, there's something there and I have no idea how it got there because it's just throwing ideas towards each other and all of a sudden just it starts brewing and there is something happening and all of a sudden it ends up in a song. And I don't know how the process works. I can't control it. It's just there and we're all part of it. And I don't want to ever have anything like AI in there. For me, I can imagine maybe in some other uses it can be helpful, but for me, it's not a no-go.
The question is whether it's a tool or something else.
And what can it be else?
Some kind of self-conscious entity. You know, people say that it's just a tool that you can use,
you know,
but it's.
It is, yeah, I agree. You know, there's when we used AI with the visualizer and also the second video and also the third one that's coming up, actually, there's a lot of people being angry at us because of using that. And I think because it's because people are scared and they should be scared in a way. But they're mostly scared about the wrong things, to my humble opinion, because I think this is something like the Industrial Revolution, to my opinion. Yeah, like we had
that's
the factory.
That's very true.
Yeah, and the genie is out of the bottle. I don't think you can put it in again. Everyone who's creative is working actually with it. Not, you know, they're not talking about it, but they are using it, like directors, art directors, people that make videos for us. Everybody is trying out stuff. And for them, it's a tool, but I do understand, like, in different levels, like in warfare, it's very dangerous. I can imagine, but I think also there's a beauty to AI. Like for instance, in the medical sector, where they can help find cancer way more easy. And you know, there's good sides and bad sides. And we need, and unfortunately, with technology, it's always the case that technology is ahead of the law. And if we know what the borders are, what we are allowed to use and not to use, and can implement that somehow in the uses of this tool, that would be great.
Will you go on tour now after the album comes out?
No, next year.
Next year. Yeah. Okay, and what can people expect from your tour in 2024?
Well, we don't know yet, actually. Can't give you any spoilers because of the fact that we are going to start that when we are done the whole promotional tour that we're doing now. And we have almost a year for that, to do that. And we want to make something spectacular like the last time because that was really in a spectacular show, I think.
You had a huge head on stage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What kind of a head was it?
It was from the Aftermath and our the Purge single that we have like this huge head on. And it's like it's our Genesis figure that we have more or less. And anyway, but it's based on that, and it was supposed to talk actually on stage, but it didn't work out. Unfortunately, we want to project on it. So sometimes you have like these huge, amazing ideas, and some things work because it looked still amazing, but on the other hand, it didn't talk, which we wanted to.
So what was it supposed to say?
Well, maybe like the Churchill speech that you can, you know, project him on it and then you would see that face and moving around.
Yeah, you sampled Winston Churchill.
Yeah, we did.
Which speech?
Well, our solemn hour. Well, Frederik, I really love being here. Thank you so much for your time, but I really have to go to my next appointment, so...
Thank you for coming here, Sharon, and good luck with everything.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for listening, everyone, and lots of love from me to all of you out there.
Den här podcasten producerades av Daniel Bäckström för Lejon Media. Sharon Den Aden från Within Temptation var hemma hos Dragi.